saving money with help from Menards. Stay cool this summer with portable air conditioners from Polonis. Featuring multiple comfort settings and built-in thermostat, they're easy to install, come with a remote, and are available in several models suited to your specific cooling needs. Take control of your comfort with Polonis products at Menards. And check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Here he is, my man, Zach Blobner. He's on the Fantasy Fix every Sunday during the NFL season. And yes, Zach, I will change my Twitter profile back to describe that when the season starts. So don't you fear.
It only took you to week, 16 last year to do it? So, yeah, I got a lot of faith in that. I'm more of a believe it when I see it type of guy there, BK.
You know, Twitter restricts you to a certain number of characters. So I got to promote what's in front of me first. And then it's an evolving, it's a revolving door at this time of the year.
Let the record show, I don't remove Fantasy Fix. It's there year round. Because it justifies the part of my profiles that say syndicated host versus just being live and local here in Tampa Bay.
No, that's I like the way you word that too. So I want to get your thoughts on a couple of topics that have crossed my mind. It is so crazy that we have Scottie Scheffler here winning yet another tournament, his sixth of the year. And how would you like to be Tom Kim in this moment? A playoff round with the best in the world. You're 22 years old. Mind you, protesters start running out onto the course, but you know, some piss had to be running down his leg in that moment.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I wonder if that moment of craziness helped or hurt him, because I think a lot of times you would assume that, like, protesters running onto the green on 18 are going to throw a lot of guys off. They're going to, like, kind of make them go a little wild compared to what they're usually doing, especially golfers, creatures of habit, right, as much as any other athlete. So I do wonder, though, if there's a moment there where Kim's able to kind of breathe a little bit in a way that he wouldn't have been otherwise. I don't know. It's tough to tell. We'll never know the difference between what would have happened had those protesters not ran out versus the actual reality of them being out there. The one thing I do know, though, without question, is that Scottie Scheffler, it compartmentalizes better than anybody on tour since probably Tiger Woods in terms of how long he's been able to do it and able to kind of keep his nerve here for the last couple of years. So, all that being said, you know, I love the fact that they're friends, Brandon. And even if it kind of helped Kim a little bit, I don't know if there's anything that's going to give you the edge over a guy like Scottie who compartmentalizes as good as anybody in the game.
It really is amazing. I don't know that it's talked about enough how much Scottie Scheffler is saving the sport right now. Golf's always going to have their hardcore fans because there are a lot of mostly men out there that make this a weekend hobby of theirs, and then they want to sit back and watch the best do it. You're always going to have that legion in the country. I believe you might be one of them.
Golf this weekend, actually.
Man, how'd the game go, by the way, before I continue on with my point?
High 90s. Is where I landed at the end of it all. I left a
it's
lot.
Not bad.
I left a lot on the table, though. I had three birdie putts that I turned into two bogeys and a double bogey. So I left a lot on the table. But that's
see what I mean. But my man's watching golf. Okay, yeah. But I think a lot would still be discussed as far as the PGA LIV rivalry merger. I'm not even sure what you're supposed to call it right now. But the golf world is quietly a mess. And Scottie Scheffler is just over here erasing all of it, diverting our attention to where we can now focus on a dominant player. If he was not doing what he is doing and ripping up this sport and standing atop above everybody else, what would be our main focus of golf? That's my point. And I don't know what the answer is other than us bitching and moaning about LIV and the PGA again.
No, you're probably not wrong there. And I feel like a lot of that clash between the two leagues has kind of lost its heat, lost its luster, because the PGA kind of folded its cards and were like, we're going to work with them to figure this out, given they haven't actually figured it out yet, but basically saying we're going to play nice and try to get on the same page, and being in the process of still doing that now. I think it's like a lot of the like hatred away, at least from the viewership perspective. I don't know how the golfers feel, but it even seems like they're getting along a lot better these days. After that, obviously, started to happen, that process. So I don't think there's a lot of luster there. The one thing I'll say, and I go back to the The U.S. Open, obviously, where Bryson DeChambeau was able to outrush a guy like Rory McIlroy, who's been the face of the PGA. I would even say more so than Scottie Scheffler, just in terms of the guys that are rolling out there to talk in light of the LIV Tour situation. Not so much on the course, because Scottie's been dominant way more compared to anybody, even a guy like Rory McIlroy. But I think what it comes down to is you have this guy now in Scottie who's awesome, right? But look how well it was received and how good it was to watch Bryson and Rory go at it. And I don't think it was because of LIV and PGA. And obviously it wasn't because of Scottie, because he wasn't in the mix. I think you had two of your top 10 guys that are known brands, known commodities, clashing. And I think that for golf to really, you know, flourish, because even Scottie being as good as he is, isn't carrying the sport like a Tiger Woods. He just isn't. He just isn't. He's the closest we've ever been, but he's still swimming in a different pond, right? So
yeah. I think he's distracting us with his success, but is he pushing golf to a different level of, like, doing what Caitlin Clark is currently doing for the WNBA? No. He's not. It was him getting arrested was the most breakthrough moment of his career.
No doubt. And the way that he handled it afterwards, right? If he comes out and he sucks after that, I don't know if that story, that might be a tragedy in terms of his golf career, you know, not to kind of put it against other actual tragedies, but professionally speaking for his career, you might have been looking back like, damn, they really messed him up. But because he played so well, even though he wasn't really there on Sunday, you give him a ton more credit than I think that story otherwise would have. But what I bring all that up to point out is we need a Scottie versus like a Brooks on a Sunday of a major. Even these tournaments, and no offense to Kim, I mean, again, they're buddies. Like, he shot a whole weekend, to be honest. But you need these top 10 guys clashing, because the only guy we've seen since that we haven't had a guy since Tiger that can carry the sport on a Sunday, even if it's just Tiger, right? Like, he did it by himself a lot of times, and we saw him go up against Phil and all these other guys, but it didn't matter whose opponent was. For Scottie, even, who is the best, it matters who your opponent is. And if you're not getting another top 10 guy that's a known brand, like a Rory, like a Bryson, a Brooks, maybe to Rom, like, those are, there's really not many. I mean, if Spieth, I think Spieth and Justin Thomas carry enough weight where if they had a crazy good week and were great on Sunday, people would watch that. But there's probably only like 10 brands, 9 if you count the guys going against Scottie, that could carry it enough to where it's Tiger-esque. Scottie right. even can't do it by himself.
Yeah, and it's certainly not on the PGA Tour, because some of the bigger names aren't even competing week to week. But a side note from what we saw. So we mentioned that there were protesters that ran onto the course. Golf courses are becoming sort of a hazardous place, if you think about it. You had a pedestrian death at the PGA Championship. Scottie was arrested in that same sort of moment of action. Two people were struck by lightning at this tournament this past weekend. And then you had a mob of protesters. This is like, remember when we were nervous about going to NBA games for a minute because of the malice at the palace? Mm-hmm. This is going to be like the most under-discussed story, is that all of a sudden golf tournaments have become like the most dangerous place in America.
Yeah. The crazy part is all those are so different, right? Like, it's not one thing. It's just watching.
They're all freak accidents. Maybe it's the curse of Scottie Scheffler. Maybe he's cursed.
Yeah, man. I'm buying into the curse. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's a lot of weird stuff happening. Yeah. And that's just on the PGA Tour. You're not including the drones buzzing so loud that John Rahm's losing his mind, like, in his backswing on the LIV Tour. Yeah, there's just a lot of weird stuff going on, which, look, again, obviously personal harm is never a good thing. I think the crazy stories, though, and you brought up the arrest with Scottie, those are things that are going to help the sport. They're going to help people come and watch golf that otherwise wouldn't. How many people do you think yesterday? I guarantee it, actually. You can mark the tape on this one, Brandon Kravitz. I guarantee you more people tuned in to that playoff between Scottie and Kim because of the protesters than Scheffler being the last guy in standing. I guarantee it. And you can make the same argument about Scottie with the arrest versus Scottie the golfer in terms of people watching that Thursday after he got nabbed in Louisville. Those are the types of things that are bringing people in outside of a clash like a, you know, DeChambeau and Rory on a major Sunday.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. Did you happen to see the name of the protesters?
No.
Extinction Rebellion. Look, I'm not endorsing running onto the course for so that you can prove a point, but they are fighting. They're fighting the good fight. I don't want the Earth to become extinct. You know, these people care about what matters.
I couldn't tell you how much I would have paid. I would have paid the cost of all four rounds just to be in the crowd Sunday booing those protesters as they got pulled off the course. My favorite thing wasn't the last, you know, putt made by Scotty or any of the great shots we saw through. My favorite thing was the sea of boos, the community of golf fans that were there coming together to say, screw these guys.
But does that make those people pro-extinction? You know, that's where I'm like, okay, probably not the right move. Maybe call a press conference to explain your extinction concerns.
I don't know, man. I don't think it's helping their case. I mean, listen, I love the environment. I want to see it protected as much as anybody else. But I don't think spray painting a golf course or smoke screening a golf course is not helping your cause. It's not it might be bringing awareness, but this is a situation of not all press is good press. People are becoming aware in a way where they're not like, we want to join you. They're becoming aware in a way where they're like, we want to boo you literally to jail.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Obviously, we're more divided than ever. We've got a presidential debate coming up that's going to be a complete clown show. And all this does is makes the left look like a bunch of loons, which is unfortunate, I think, for either side to be painted in that direction. But they tend to bring it onto themselves. Part of it, too, was that we got to see these protesters get tackled, which does make me miss football. I came across this highlight reel on Twitter, some of Tim Tebow, your boy, Tim Tebow's best touchdown plays. And I tweeted this. It's got a lot of reaction over the weekend. I ask myself this question often. Is Tim Tebow the greatest college football player of all time? And of course, like any college football take, this received a good level of pushback. Is it accurate, though? Is Tim Tebow? Because there's so many great options to pick from. And then I also think there's like a subset of criteria. Do you have to play a certain number of years? What is it to be the best? Is it best per position? But I think when I don't put too much thought into it and my just gut react to somebody asks me the question, I'm walking down the street, who's the greatest college football player of all time? I think my answer is Tebow.
I'll say this. It's an impossible argument because you could put probably like 8 to 10 guys in that chat. You really could. I think that whether you're talking about Tim Tebow, you could look at Joe Burrow and what he did his last year at LSU. I think Joe Burrow's LSU team is the best team ever we've seen in college ball because of what they accomplished, because of the names on it. I think the best season we've ever seen was Cam Newton at Auburn, his Heisman year. I feel pretty confident in that. Like, I'd take that to my death at this point. Best player ever, so hard, man. And we look at quarterbacks, and Tebow is definitely in the argument. The guy that I always come to mind, though, when I'm like, who can I close my eyes and say this guy was unstoppable, is Reggie Bush, right? We talk about quarterbacks, too. And again, I think there's a lot of guys you can throw in there. I know Florida State fans will certainly want to throw Jameis Winston in there. And that's just focusing on quarterbacks. I think about a guy like Reggie Bush. And I think even at FSU, if you're talking Noles, you could bring up Peter Warwick as like a better player potentially. Like, so it's such an impossible argument. I do think that it's a short list of guys that can really have their name thrown into the hat. I think Tebow would be one of them. But I think it's impossible. Again, I think best season ever goes to Cam Newton. I think best team ever goes to that LSU Joe Burrow-led squad. And I feel really good about those two. I've made the argument against Tebow, even though I went to Florida. I'm a huge Gator fan. People always are shocked when I bring this up in this capacity because to me, sports-wise, Gainesville-wise, he is the best player I've ever seen. He's God. Like, he owns the Swamp. I love him to death. But in my, you know, sports opinion, best player ever in college, it's so impossible to argue it.
I think because of his dual threat ability, and he was just such a touchdown monster. He's the only player in NCAA history to rush and pass for at least 20 touchdowns in a season. He did that back in 2007. He owns 28 records as a Florida Gator. And where I think people end up getting a little bit warped in their assessment of Tebow or anybody else is what he was as a pro. Mm-hmm. And I love the NFL as much as anybody else. Zach, you and I have an NFL show that we do together every single year that will be prominently featured on my profile on Twitter any week now. We love it. Okay. Tim Tebow sucked as an NFL quarterback, but he was great as a college quarterback, and not mm-hmm. just great as far as running the ball and being a sort of a bull in a china shop. he was an efficient quarterback. I think that's the thing that people forget. He had, his quarterback rating was through the roof. His accuracy was through the roof. Now, it's easier to be accurate at the college level, which is why he was able to get away with it. But he still was. And he did it for multiple seasons. A lot of people that push back do say Cam Newton. Cam was great for 1 year.
Yeah.
And maybe, like you said, the greatest single season that we've seen. He put that Auburn team completely on his back. And talk about unstoppable. But over the course of multiple seasons, doing what Tebow did,
Yeah, I
feel like he's the answer. Reggie Bush comes to mind, maybe the most electrifying player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But and this predates us a little bit. We were alive for it, but we were tiny. Barry Sanders was probably just as good, if not better, than Reggie Bush. So, you know, there's a little bit of canceling out there. The other quarterbacks that would be on the list, a lot of those guys aren't dual threat. And I just, in the same way that we vote for Heisman based on what things can you do, what variety can you provide to the game? I feel like Tebow did that as well as anybody.
Yeah, no, I think that the argument's there. I've had it so many times that I know there's just no perfect way to come to a conclusion. It's one of those where it's more of preference. It's more like, what do you lean on? Do you think that there needs to be a little longevity? Do you think that being able to play, dual threat, or we even have guys that have played both sides of the ball, right? Like, how much do all those things matter? What about players that could have went pro in baseball too, or played, you know, in the NBA after, right? I mean, it's tough, man. It's tough because I think there's a lot of different ways to kind of rank it and figure it out. It's a beautiful argument to have, though. And again, that's just, we're really even focusing on the last 20 years. You start going back into some of the great Nebraska teams and some of the old school, like, just maulers that we've seen.
Yeah. Tommy Frazier was a name that was brought up a few times.
He seems to be the, like, throwback name when this chat comes up, that comes up more than anybody. And, like, full disclosure, I know he was a legendary, you know, player for them. I haven't watched him play because he predated me. But the way people talk about him is if you're going to pick one guy from before our, like, full-on career started, Brandon, he seems to be the name that people want to throw into the mix, and that's got to stand for something, right?
He was my introduction to watching college football as a kid, and just watching him run around. I remember trying to pretend like I was Tommy Frazier out on the street. That must have been during his final season, and I wasn't watching college football nearly to the degree that I wound up years later, but still knew that name as a kid. All right, before we wrap, I got to throw this one your way because, you know, every once in a while I like to spy in on you and Jay Retcher and the show that you guys do, Noon to 3 on 95.3. What an incredible pairing you guys are. Which Tampa Bay team is the closest to winning a championship? A fun summer topic that you guys threw out there. And it really doesn't feel like, from an outsider's perspective, and I'm not the biggest hockey guy in the world, it doesn't feel like any of the three are all that close, but if you have to answer the question, you got to come up with one. Your answer was Tampa Bay. They're all Tampa Bay. Your answer was the Bucks. What threw me though, because it was like there really wasn't a great answer. Rays, the Lightning feel like, you know, they're aging out. The Rays feel like they've taken a step back. The Wander Franco issue hasn't helped any. And then the Bucks are kind of in the middle of the NFL. You said the Bucks. What threw me though was your reasoning, because you immediately went to Baker Mayfield. You're going to have to explain this one to me.
Yeah, well, only because I don't think he's the number one reason why. First of all, I think the Lightning are the safe choice in this conversation. For me, though, I just have a hard time believing that they can make it through the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, it's harder to bet on hockey because it's just the hardest postseason in sports, in my opinion. So even though I think the Lightning are the better team, you could argue have obviously the better core in terms of making it happen. I just think it's harder to win. In the NFL, you got to win one game, right? Like, so I think the Bucks, I wouldn't put them as the best team in the NFC, let alone in the entire NFL, but they'd only have to play one of the teams out of the AFC. And if they just catch a team on the, like, let's say they play San Francisco and Purdy's hurt, and I don't even know if their backup is at this point, but they're throwing that guy in the NFC Championship, or, you know, Jared Goff goes down and it's Detroit and you're playing they got the kid out of Tennessee, I think. I can't think of his name.
Right. Hendon Hooker.
So he'd be like, so for me, I see in the NFL, just in terms of probability in the playoffs and things that can go wrong for one team and right for the other, it doesn't take as much. In the NHL postseason, you need a team to completely that's better than you implode. Or even if you are the Lightning, and that's the thing, is I don't think the Lightning are one of the top three teams on even their side anymore, and I don't think they will be next year either. So you're going to probably need a couple teams to do that through a series of games. So that was kind of my take on it. The reason I brought up Baker Mayfield, though, is because I know for a fact, having the chat about the Bucs in the Super Bowl again, people are going to immediately say, how about Baker Mayfield? It's the number one thing. That or Todd Bowles. But I think right now the sexier chat for people is always going to go to the quarterback position. So I got in front of it. That's why I brought up Baker first. Not because I think he's the main reason, but I don't think he's going to hold this team back from being able to win a Super Bowl in a way that other people do. He just had his best season as a pro. I think not only can he have a similar season, I think there's potential for him to build on it. They had the worst rushing attack in the league for like the third straight year. It's been awful. So if they can find with a new OC again some type of rhythm in the backfield, it's only going to make his job easier at quarterback. You have more chemistry with these receivers than he had last year. The offensive line was shuffled pretty hardcore at the beginning of training camp last season, and that seems to be really set concretely in a way that it wasn't a season ago. So I think there's a lot of factors that play into Baker maybe being better this year. And he's not the guy that I think held them back from being able to win the championship or even get to the NFC title game last year. I think you're just talking about a team that people are expecting to kind of take a step back. For me, I think it's more likely they take a step forward because of a lot of the things I just mentioned. Not that they're perfect. I'm certainly concerned about some things like the pass rush outside of Yaya Diaby, the secondary outside of Antoine Winfield Jr. So, like, there are things, there are warts on this team. But for me, I think the Bucs, you got to like them again in the NFC South, regardless of Kirk Cousins. That means that if you're expecting to probably be a playoff team again, you're starting to think about the path. Well, they know they can win a home game in the postseason. We've seen it against what I think was a better Philly team. And I know there's a lot going on there with the Eagles, but then you're talking about a team that, you know, you only have to rip off three or four games there. So a big part of it for me is math, just in terms of the postseason and how it's set up. And I don't think Baker's going to be a deterrent, like many would argue when you start talking about them. The one thing we did agree on, though, whether you're going Lightning or you're going Bucks, is that the Rays are probably the furthest away, especially looking at their team this year.
Damn, that sucks because they were so close, too. Great way to start the week. Follow him at Zach on the mic, wherever you can find his stuff. Till next time, Zach.
Later.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.